Ukraine ends 2023 with Russian bombardments, a stalled counteroffensive, and worries over continued Western aid.
The Ukrainians did unfortunately lose thousands, if not tens of thousands, of soldiers, both killed and wounded. They lost a lot of Western military weapon systems and ammunition. Of course, was expended in this attempt at a counteroffensive.
Plus, a new report indicates a much higher death toll than Russia reported following the destruction of a major Ukrainian dam in June.
An AP investigation has found that Russian authorities vastly and deliberately undercounted the dead after the incident.
And later in the program, Ukraine's frontline kids yearn to go back to school. Today is Monday, January 1st. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Russia unleashed 122 missiles and dozens of drones against Ukrainian targets on Friday, killing dozens of civilians across the country in what military officials said was likely the most massive aerial barrage of the war. Then, into the hours leading into New Year's Eve, Russia pounded several major cities with missiles and drones, hours after Moscow accused Kyiv of carrying out a deadly assault just across the border on nearby Belgorod. Western officials and analysts warned that Russia had limited its cruise missile strikes in recent months in an apparent effort to build up stockpiles for massive strikes during the winter in hopes of breaking the Ukrainians' spirit. Ukraine attempted to break through the lines of invading Russian forces in 2023 as the West stepped up the supply of heavier weapons and advanced missile systems. But as Henry Ridgewell reports, neither side appears to be able to have made a significant breakthrough, and there is little sign that Kyiv and Moscow are prepared to negotiate a peace deal.
Invading Russian forces seized the Ukrainian salt mining town of Soledar in January 2023 after months of brutal fighting. Russian missiles continued to rain down on Ukrainian cities. With Ukrainian forces struggling to make battlefield gains, Western allies announced they would send heavy weapons to Kyiv, including tanks and longer-range missile systems. Ahead of the first anniversary of the war in February, US President Joe Biden made an unannounced visit to Kyiv. He said Russian President Vladimir Putin had been wrong about Western commitment to Ukraine.
He thought he could outlast us. I don't think he's thinking that right now.
Evidence suggests that Russia destroyed the Novokakhovka Dam in May, flooding vast areas of southeast Ukraine to stall any Ukrainian counteroffensive and creating an environmental disaster. Russia, in return, blamed Ukraine for the structure's collapse. By June, Ukraine was able to recapture some territory, but failed to achieve a major breakthrough in the Russian lines. The Western weapon supplies were too little, too late, says analyst Ian Bond.
The Russians had a long time to build up their minefields and their fixed fortifications. So they're actually in a much stronger position than they were. And we've been asking the Ukrainians to launch their counteroffensive when they have very little air capability.
Mercenaries from Russia's private Wagner army staged a mutiny in June. Putin negotiated an end to the rebellion. Wagner's chief, Yevgeny Prigozhin, was killed in a plane crash a few weeks later. By November, Ukraine's commander-in-chief said the war had reached a stalemate, though Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, disagreed with his assessment. Zelensky did achieve a diplomatic breakthrough, as the European Union in December agreed to start formal accession talks.
The negotiation process will not be easy, but the main thing is that historically we have made a determination. Ukraine will always be part of our common European home.
But that European future remains in the balance, says analyst Olga Tokariuk.
If Ukraine is defeated, if Ukraine fails militarily, all the, EU membership negotiations process is worthless. But it will not just be a defeat of Ukraine. It will be a defeat of European Union and the wider West that committed to supporting Ukraine as long as it takes.
Ukrainian forces face a long, bitter winter on the front lines, with vital military aid packages held up in both the United States and the European Union. Analysts say Ukraine's greatest concern for the coming year is Western fatigue, as the US presidential election looms at the end of 2024. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
2023 started on a high note for Ukraine with a number of successes, but it ended with uncertainty over continued Western aid and a counteroffensive against invading Russian forces that has not brought the success they had hoped for. I spoke with Ukraine war correspondent Christopher Miller, an author of the book The War Came to Us, for a look ahead and what he's hearing about the mood on the ground. You ended up writing a book talking about the evolution of your experience there as someone who fell in love with the country before Russia's invasion, and a new year is beginning. And for a while there, it seemed hopeful Ukraine was making progress. How do you think things have been going in the past year and how the year is ending for Ukraine and the situation that it's in?
You know, a year ago this time, Ukraine was still riding pretty high, coming off of two successful counteroffensives that saw it take back all of the territory that Russia had occupied in eastern Kharkiv region, and the counteroffensive that saw it reclaim the city of Kherson in the south and push Russian forces further toward Crimea in the south of the country there. You know, they were gearing up, the Ukrainians were, for what was anticipated to be a major spring counteroffensive. That counteroffensive got delayed and pushed back further into the summer, and it became a summer and early autumn counteroffensive that unfortunately failed to achieve Ukraine's lofty goals of reclaiming all of its territory that is currently under Russian occupation and pushing Russian forces out beyond the 1991 borders of the country when Ukraine became an independent state and broke away from the Soviet Union. And that was always going to be a long shot, really, to push Russian forces completely out of Ukraine, including the Black Sea Peninsula of Crimea. But there was hope that with all of this Western military assistance, including American Abrams tanks and various other weapons systems given by the British and the Germans, among other countries, that Ukraine would be able to take back a huge swath of territory and maybe even achieve its strategic objective of cutting off what is called the land bridge that exists between Russia and the occupied territories in the south of the country that connect Russia with occupied Crimea. Now, that didn't happen. And so, you know, where we are now is looking at a Ukrainian military that ran into all sorts of troubles on the front line trying to break through what was a really dense and difficult Russian defensive line with layers and layers of countless mines, heavy weaponry being fired at them. The Ukrainians did unfortunately lose thousands, if not tens of thousands, of soldiers, both killed and wounded. They lost a lot of Western military weapon systems and ammunition, of course, was expended in this attempt at a counteroffensive. And now we're going into 2024, looking ahead at what appears to be another very difficult year. Politically in the United States, our own issues in Washington are now raising concerning questions about whether Western military assistance and American assistance in particular is going to continue flowing to Ukraine. And should that dry up, that could be disastrous for the military, which is heavily reliant on Western assistance, but American assistance in particular. And that is because we, the Americans, have a large stockpile of weapons and munitions, whereas the Europeans, who are also very supportive of Ukraine, don't have as deep of stocks. So it's a difficult year ahead. Ukraine's going to have some challenges in regarding the ongoing Western assistance. It will have some force issues of its own. It'll probably have to mobilize more men to fight in this war against Russia. And, you know, a year ago, as I began this, you know, saying that it was the Ukrainians riding high, I think this year the Russians are feeling a little bit more comfortable in their position. Mm-hmm. They're deeper entrenched in their positions. They're looking at a United States that is still deeply polarized, questioning its ongoing support of Ukraine, and it's put itself on a war footing and is producing a lot of weapons. And this could be a year where we see the Ukrainians shift to a more defensive posture and the Russians possibly go more on the offensive.
Right. And there could be the potential for Ukraine continuing to move forward at becoming a member of the EU. And of course, they're also hoping to eventually get into the NATO alliance. All of these things are not going to be quick, and they have hit some obstacles, but I'm sure they're still hopeful about that, at least.
And this isn't to say that everything is doom and gloom for Ukraine. Obviously, this very important decision came down from the European Council on December 15th that Ukraine would be able to open accession talks with the EU. That was a major political victory for Ukraine, for President Volodymyr Zelensky in particular. You know, I was in Kyiv when this decision came down, and many of my Ukrainian friends were jubilant. You know, it was a moment of levity and high spirits, you know, after months of seeing this counteroffensive struggle. This was, for many Ukrainians, a struggle that was, you know, 10 years since the Euromaidan revolution in 2013 and 14, and even for many well beyond that, who dreamed of becoming a more westernized, democratic, and member of the European Union since independence. So that was a high point. And there certainly are other things that have happened and that are underway in Ukraine related to reforms and the democratization of society, even amid martial law, that I think are bright spots.
Is there one point in particular in the past year that really stood out to you as one of the most difficult? I'm thinking the blowing up of Kakhovka Dam, but from your perspective as someone who lives in Ukraine, is there one particular event that stands out the most?
You know, if I can name maybe a couple, one for me personally was the destruction of the eastern Ukrainian city of Bakhmut, which is where, as you mentioned, I wrote a book about Ukraine and the war, and Bakhmut was a place that I lived for 2 years and made a lot of friends. And, you know, it was a city, unfortunately, that was destroyed over months and months of heavy fighting between Ukrainian and Russian forces, and the Russians ended up occupying it in May. And that was a big blow, not only for me and the 70,000 people who lived in that city and called that home, but Bakhmut was a rallying cry for Ukrainians. And, you know, to lose it, it did deal a moral blow to Kyiv. The Kakhovka Dam explosion, certainly, like you mentioned, was devastating. You know, it really made life even more difficult and miserable for those people living on the Dnieper River in the south, flooded huge swaths of an area of southern Ukraine. And so people had to not only worry about bombs and artillery, but also floods and, you know, their water source drying up. And that was a particularly difficult moment, no doubt. I think the third, I would just, you know, reiterate again, the counteroffensive and that not going as planned, that was certainly a blow to the Ukrainians. But I also think in that they learned a lot. And there is some success that I think we can take away from that. First of all, while it didn't achieve the ground objectives in taking territory back, the Ukrainians did manage to use drones and some of the longer range weaponry that they have very effectively in targeting Russia's Black Sea fleet and military bases in Crimea. They destroyed several Russian Black Sea vessels and warships this year. They really made Russia's grip on Crimea more difficult and managed to even push back the Black Sea fleet from ports in Crimea to Russian ports. And so that's a victory in and of itself.
We are hearing a bit about war weariness going into another winter, and with things not exactly ending the year on a high note as far as worrying about the counteroffensive not going as hoped, and of course, bigger concerns about whether the U.S. is going to continue being able to provide support. How are people that you know and you talk to feeling about the setbacks? Are they worried for what could happen without that support? What are you hearing?
Yeah, Ukrainians, of course, are worried. They're also exhausted. You know, for them, this country of roughly 40 million people, this is a war that has not been going on only for the past 2 years. The past 2 years have just seen Russia's war on this all-out massive scale. But war has been waged by Russia against Ukraine now for 10 years. So, you know, Ukrainians have lived with this for a long time. You know, they're exhausted by it. But they don't have the luxury of sort of, you know, just moving on to the next big global conflict or event and being distracted by our American politics or somebody else's election in the EU or the war in Israel and Gaza. They are living with war. They're going to be living with it, they fear, for quite a while now, you know, going ahead. And to put it plainly, they're tired of the discussion around our, in the West, war fatigue. You know, they don't have the luxury of being tired. They have to continue to go out and fight day in and day out. They're losing many of their very best people who have volunteered to fight against Russia. To them, to Ukrainians, this is an existential war.
war. So while they are perhaps not in the highest of spirits this holiday season, as they were last year, they know what needs to be done. They know that if they stop fighting, if they stop lobbying for outside support from the West, that could be disastrous, that could lead to a Ukrainian loss, a Russian victory, which would not only be devastating to Ukraine, but also to Europe, to NATO, and I think, to the world writ large.
Christopher Miller, author of The War Came to Us, Life and Death in Ukraine.
When Russia began its full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February of 2022, thousands of citizens, men and women, young and old, lined up to enlist in the Ukrainian army to fight to save their country. But with the war entering now into yet another new year, it has taken a toll, and there are no more lines. We hear more from Reuters correspondent Lauren Anthony.
When Antonina Danilovich's husband, Alexander, enlisted in the Ukrainian army in March 2022, he lined up at the draft office alongside swathes of patriotic countrymen. She says those crowds are now non-existent. As the war drags towards the two-year mark, Ukraine seems to be struggling to bolster its army, meaning little reprieve for some of those already in service. Danilovich and 25,000 others signed a petition to President Volodymyr Zelensky this autumn. They say military service cannot remain open-ended and insist troops be given a clear timeline for when they'll be discharged. The campaign has included two small protests in Kyiv's main square in recent weeks, despite martial law prohibiting public demonstrations since the start of the war.
We have gathered here today to make our government acknowledge that our husbands joined service at the very start of the war, just when the full-scale invasion began. We demand that the length of time the mobilized men must serve is clearly defined. We hope we will be heard, and our husbands too. It is very tough for them. They are exhausted. They do not need rotation. We are here to demand they are given proper rest.
Danilovich's husband has only had about 25 days of home leave since he enlisted. With no end to his tour in sight, she's finding it hard to cope. She says Alexander, formerly a university lecturer, now a platoon commander, had to watch his son get married this year on video call from the ruined city of Bakhmut. Her 14-year-old daughter misses her dad.
We were sitting together, all the wives, and asking ourselves, how much longer? How much more time will pass before the length of our husband's, son's service is defined? It is not clear. You need to understand, while the boys are fighting, children grow up without fathers. We do not want the war to just end. We want Ukraine to win, but not with the hands of the same people and only those people. I understand they need to be replaced. They also need to rest. But somehow, other people do not understand it.
Alexander and his unit couldn't be reached for comment. Many families, like Danilovich's, face the prospect of a longer and costlier conflict than they'd hoped for, one that some now acknowledge they're not guaranteed to win. Ukraine's vaunted summer counteroffensive has so far failed to deliver a decisive breakthrough, and both Ukraine and Russia are dug in along largely static front lines. Danilovich's campaign points to difficult choices war planners face as they try to maintain the flow of recruits to defeat a much larger army amid steady losses, while retaining a big enough workforce to sustain the shattered economy. The army recruitment process largely takes place out of the public eye. Only Ukrainian men aged between 27 and 60 can be mobilized by draft officers. But these officers do stop men in the streets, at the metro or at checkpoints and hand out call-up papers to them, instructing them to report to recruitment centers. Over the last year, social media videos occasionally surface showing officers dragging away or threatening men they want to mobilize. Reuters spoke to this man in September, who asked not to be identified. He says he has a job that allows him to stay indoors for long periods of time, which helps him avoid being handed a draft note. If he does have to leave, he uses taxis instead of public transport.
I remain at home because I can be handed a draft note in any public place. I have heard stories about men getting draft notes in buses, on public transport, in cafes. That's why I do not go anywhere in public places.
Some sociologists say a gloomier mood has set in nationwide. They point to surveys showing declining trust in the government, which had surged in the first months of the war when Ukrainian forces repelled Russian advances. Danilovich says it's hard watching the war unfold from the home front. Women have indeed become stronger, but at what cost, she says. Everyone pays a different price.
Lauren Anthony with Reuters reporting. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. It was one of the most devastating Russian attacks on Ukraine. The destruction of the Kakhovka Dam on June 6th forced the evacuation of thousands and flooded hundreds of homes.
This community has been hit literally by shelling and now by the floods caused by the destruction of the dam, which is caused by the war. It's an intolerable level of suffering.
Huge swaths of agricultural land were rendered infertile, putting the global food supply further at risk. Experts warned that the environmental toll could last for decades. The Associated Press now reports at least hundreds of people died in floods after the dam collapse, far more than Russia had said. AP correspondent Karen Shamus reports.
It has been over 6 months since the catastrophic explosion that destroyed the Kakhovka Dam in the southern Kherson region. An AP investigation has found that Russian authorities vastly and deliberately undercounted the dead after the incident. Russian authorities took control of the issuance of death certificates, immediately removing bodies not claimed by family. Russia, which didn't respond to questions for the report, has said 59 people drowned in the territory it controls, but the AP estimates the number is more likely in the hundreds. I'm Karen Chamas.
Russia's war in Ukraine, which will enter its third year in February, has taken a toll on schoolchildren. Sitting alone in her bedroom, Ukrainian third grader Arina Haryskmova is an example of the loneliness it has brought as she stares at her teacher and classmates on a screen, longing to return. Rachel Graham with Reuters has more.
If anyone needs to go to the bomb shelter, go ahead. If someone has an air raid alert, leave the class and go to the shelter. If everything is fine, let's continue.
Arina Gerasimova's schooling is punctuated with warnings like these, delivered by her teacher virtually. Fighting rages just 25 miles away from her home in Slovyansk, a city in the eastern Donetsk region, which is under regular threat of Russian airstrikes. The 8-year-old's education was first forced online by the COVID-19 pandemic, then again by Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine almost 2 years ago. Her mother, Arina, says she hasn't attended school since the first grade.
She used to take judo classes. She was an active child. Now I look at her and she has changed so much. She doesn't want to do anything. She doesn't have friends. Her spirits are low. She knows it's a long time before she can come back to school, to judo. She has changed. Mentally, it's hard for her.
Now a third grader, Arina says she would like to make friends, see her teacher, and play outside during recess. She never meets her classmates and knows them only from their thumbnail images online. But the hope of returning seems a distant dream. Local school director Anatoly Pogyarelov said classes in frontline areas like Slovyansk would remain remote unless better bomb shelters were built or until the war ended.
Remote education is the only way for now. Maybe when Ukraine will win back most of all of its territory, we could consider mixed or offline studies. The possibility of studying where there is an equipped bomb shelter. Currently, we do not have this option, alas.
However, in the northeastern Kharkiv region, which borders Russia, officials have begun building heavily fortified underground schools to allow children to return safely to in-person studies.
Rachel Graham with Reuters. And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, we thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.